Okay, this week, Sedra, we begin, don't finish, the parish of the Makos, Esser Makos, seven of them on this week, Sedra, and three of them on next week, Sedra. So I thought it would be an interesting idea to speak a little bit about what the purpose of the Makos were. Where are these Makos hinted to before they happen? When HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Avram Avinu that the Jewish people would be strangers in a land that's not theirs, Geri Yezaracha Deres Elohem, Va'avadum, and they would be enslaved, Ve'inu Osam, they'd be oppressed. He told them also the following, Ve'ganes HaGoy Asher Yadvodu Don Anochi, I will judge the nation that oppresses them, and afterwards they will go out with great riches. So he could have said va'achar kein. There's an extra yud. Why va'acharei chen yetsu b'chush gadol? So the yud, the Rishonim say, Balei HaTosfos, hints to the Esser Makos. Va'acharei chen, after 10 plagues, they'll go out with b'chush gadol. It's interesting that yud that hints to the 10 plagues is not by Don Anochi, not by the judging the Egyptians, but it's between the judging of the Egyptians and their going out Birchush Gadol. So you have to understand why. Why the yud, that extra yud that hints to the 10 plagues, is not in the words that specifically speak about judging the Egyptians. That's one thing. It's interesting also that the word don, I will judge, has the same numerical value, the same gematria as mate, the staff. And it was the mate that was the vehicle to bring the Esser Makos. Right? In last week's Sedra, this staff, take, right? All of the signs and wonders you'll do through this mate. So if we understand a little bit the mate first, we can understand then what the makos were. The Malbim says that the mate served three purposes. The first purpose was it gave Moshe Rabbeinu, not respect, but it gave him a certain look of grandeur, right? It's a kavod malachim, okay, that Moshe Rabbeinu should gain respect in the eyes of Paro. He should, and Paro should should humble himself before Moshe Rabbeinu. Somebody carries a stick, so it's a chassidim. They usually carry a cane, not because they're limp, and not because of any other reason except that it's a cover, a silver cane or whatever shows a certain amount of authority. That's the word, authority. It gave Moshe Rabbeinu a look of authority to humble Paro. That's the first thing. And therefore, what was the first thing that Moshe Rabbeinu did with that staff? Turn it into a tanin. Some say a snake, and others say a crocodile, tanin. And Paro was compared to a tanin, the great crocodile of the Nile. Right? Paro was many times in the Navi refers to him as tanim hagadol, right? The great crocodile of the Nile is Paro. And Moshe Rabbeinu took the tail of that crocodile, turned it into a staff in his hand to show Paro that you're in my hands. I can do what I want with you. So that was a sign of authority over Paro, the mate. And therefore, when they came to Paro, and Paro said to them, Tenu lochem mofes, give yourselves a proof, a sign, to show me that you have some kind of authority over here, that's when he threw the mate down. The word lochem is the same osios as melech. It gave Moshe the power of a king, the authority of a king, to hold that staff that represented royalty and his shlita over Paro. So that was, what's it called? And it's also interesting that it gave Moshe Rabbeinu also a strength to feel assured in his mission. How so? Last week's Edra, the Rabbanu Shel Olam tells Moshe Rabbeinu that you're going to go to Paro, you're going to go to the Jewish people and tell them that I appear to you and that I'm going to now redeem them. And the Shamu Lekolecha, and God says, I'm telling you, they'll listen to you. And you'll go to Paro and tell him and fulfill your mission. Moshe Rabbeinu says to the Rabbanu Shel Olam, V'hein lo yaminu li. I hate to differ with you, God, but I know these people. They won't believe a word of this, right? They'll say that God didn't appear to you. Now, if you were God, how would you respond to that? Right, who do you think you are? I told you they'll listen to you, right? Who are you to tell me that they won't listen to you? Right? Who are you arguing with? So, what does God say to him? He says, oh, you got a point. So, if they don't listen, then show them this miracle. If they don't listen to that, here's another miracle. And if they don't listen to those two things, this one will convince them. What in the world? The Rabban says, they'll listen. They'll listen. But now he changed his mind because Moshe Rabbeinu said that they won't listen. What does it mean? So the simple answer is that God meant they'll listen after they showed him three miracles. But he didn't have a chance to tell Moshe Rabbeinu and finish off and explain. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, if I'm just going to come and tell them they won't listen to me, God said, no, I meant to say that you show them three miracles, that's why they'll listen. That's a simple. I have a better answer, though. I think it's true, whether it's the pshat or not. And that is, if Moshe Rabbeinu would have said, I believe in these people, and they will listen to me, they would have listened to him. But because he had doubts, when the leader has doubts whether the people are going to listen or not, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. A salesman can't sell you something he doesn't believe in. Right? Because if deep down he doesn't believe it, you'll catch that he's trying to put something over on you. If he really believes in the product, he can convince you to believe in it. If Moshe Rabbeinu believed that the Jewish people had the capacity to listen and believe, they would have believed. But since he had doubts, Memela, what's it called? Memela didn't believe. So what did the Rabban Shem do? The Rabban Shem said, you spoke Lashon Hara about these people. You said that they're not fit to be redeemed, they won't listen. So who is the symbol, or what is the symbol of Lashon Hara? The original snake that spoke Lashon Hara against God. So Moshe Rabbeinu, that staff that you're carrying, is going to remind you to strengthen you in your shlichus, that gives you... You're going to try to sell to Paro that you're my shliach and I want you to redeem. You have to be convinced of it. So the staff will remind you of, when it turns into a snake, right? Believe in the Jewish people. So that was the first purpose of the mate, to give Moshe Rabbeinu authority over Paro, to make Paro humble before him, and to give Moshe Rabbeinu the self-confidence that his mission is going to be successful. So all of that is part of the same thing. Second purpose of a staff, says the Malbim. Oh, I told you the Malbim does not say. It just does purpose of the staff. Don't blame the Malbim. Don't come to me and say, I didn't see the Malbim says that. He doesn't. Okay. But he says this concept of authority, this is, I think, what it encompasses. Second thing that the mate represents is a staff is to hit people with, to punish them. Right, you hit people with a stick. Okay, so the second and that's why the mata was made of sanpirim, which is like harder than diamond, right? Because it was something to hit people with, nice and hard. And in fact, the Balei Atosa say that Moshe Rabbeinu was given the staff with the following preface. Moshe Rabbeinu said, Lo ish devarim anochi. I'm not a guy who can speak. I'm not a man of words. So God said, you're not going to need words over here. You don't chastise a slave with words. You chastise him with a good hit on the back. That's what you're going to do. You're not going to chastise power with words. You don't have to be a man of words. Take the stick, hit him with the stick. So that is another purpose of the matter. The purpose of the matter is to punishment. So Moshe Rabbeinu was going to punish Paro for all the evil they already did to the Jewish people. And lastly, the purpose of a staff is for support. A person uses a cane for support, right? And the matter instructed the Jewish people to learn from what was going on, from all the makos, tremendous belief and faith, and in the Ribono Shel Olam, in the fact that the Ribono Shel Olam runs the world and controls the world, all of that also was a lesson to the Jewish people, a chizuk. It was a support to the Jewish people. Based on all of this, if that is the three functions of a staff, then, and the staff was the vehicle to bring the Esrei Makos, then we have three purposes for the Esrei Makos. One purpose was to warn Paro, to make him humble him, to make him recapitulate and to let them go. Second purpose, to punish him for past deeds. And the third purpose, to strengthen the Jewish people. Three purposes. Now, on the surface, two of those purposes seem to be a little contradictory. Okay? Because if, in fact, Paro was being humbled and had free choice, and we want him to recapitulate and let the Jewish people go, then what are we punishing him for past deeds already? Punishing him, right? Give him a chance. And if the idea is that God hardened Paro's heart and he had no choice anymore, like the Rambam says, then there's no idea we are humbling Paro, there's us punishing him. So the staff, Lechora, couldn't have had both of those purposes. But Lechora did. First, let's explain this idea. We have throughout the Sedra, the Ani Akshev, Ani Achbir is slave Paro. I'll harden Paro's heart. Okay? There are two basic difference of opinion what that means. The Rambam says that Paro already did enough to be liable to a death penalty. He's already oppressed the Jewish people, killed their children, or whatever, to a point where he does not, he deserves punishment. And really, I could kill him right now, but I'm not going to. I'm going to harden his heart, take away his free choice, and use him as a pawn to teach the world a lesson. So according to the Rambam, Paro had no free choice. And the hardening of his heart was to take away his free choice, to use him as a pawn to teach the world a lesson. Okay? Now, if that is doesn't sit well with you, how can you have a person who doesn't have free choice? But God could have killed him. And at that point, he wouldn't have free choice either. So instead of killing him, God permitted him to continue to live, but as a robot, in order to do his will. And all the punishments that Paro got after that were not for not listening now, because he had no free choice, but for what he did up until then, which sealed his fate anyway. That's the Rambam. The Sfarno and others say no, just the opposite. God wanted Paro to have free will. He wanted him to choose to let the Jewish people go, not to be forced. And since he wanted to bring the 10 plagues, right, under any normal person, under normal situation, being affected by those 10 plagues would have been forced to let the Jewish people go. So God hardened Paro's heart to even the playing field, to balance out, right, that now he'll have a hardened heart which will make it possible for him to withstand the Makos, but still to have free choice. He could capitulate, he could remain strong. If he hadn't hardened his heart, he surely would have had to give in to the Makos. No human being with a normal courage could have withstood that. So it's almost one extreme to the other. According to the Rambam, Paro's free choice was taken away from him. According to the Sfarno, Paro's free choice was given to him through the hardening of his heart. Now, if Paro was given free choice to let them go, right? So then why is he being punished until afterwards? Right? And if the idea is his free choice was taken away, then it's a punishment, the 10 plagues, for past things, but we're not giving him a chance to humble himself and capitulate, because that's out of the question. So I told you that the Mata and the Mela, the Eser Makos, had both purposes. The Chora, that can't work if you hold that God took away his free choice. However, on the other side, that God gave him free choice by hardening his heart, he still could be punished for things he did up until then and still be given a chance to be humbled. So according to the opinion that Paro's heart was hardened to give him free choice, both of those things could exist, punishment and humbling him. According to the opinion that says his free choice was taken away, only punishment could be, but humbling him wouldn't be an effect. I was thinking with that I wanted to explain a machlokus in the Haggadah. The Haggadah first says there were 10 plagues in Egypt and 50 plagues at the sea. Then there's a machlokus Rabbi Lezer and Rabbi Akiva. How many parts were there to each plague? Rabbi Lezer says there were 4 parts to each plague, because it says Ashalach Bom Charal Napo, God will send his anger against them. Evra Vazam, the something other, Evra Vazam, Mishlachas Malachi Roin, that's the next one, but what's something between? What? Tzara, Evra Vazam Vitzara, Umishlachas Malachi Roin. 4 things. So that each plague had 4 parts to it. Rabbi Akiva argues, he says, no, there were 5 parts. The Ashlach Bom Charon Apo is the first, he counts that as one. Evra Vazam Vitzar, Umishlachas Malachi Roin, 4 more, 5. All different explanations of what that means. Based on what I just told you now, I think it means the following. Charon Af, whenever it says that God got angry or whatever, it doesn't mean he wants to destroy or punish somebody, necessarily. It means that he wants to make an impression. Like Rashi says before, Vayichar Af Hashem B'Moshe, he wants to make an impression on him, right, in order to make him do tshuva. So, Charon Af by itself can mean to humble someone with anger. But the purpose being not to punish him with the anger, but to make an impression and to make him do tshuva. Rabbi Lezer held like the opinion that Paro had no free choice. So there was no idea of being angry at him to make an impression, to make him do tshuva. There was no tshuva involved over here. There was only punishment. So Rabbi Lezer said the Charon Af over here means these 4 things. It wasn't a separate thing. What is Charon Apo, Evra, Vazam, Vitzaro, Mishlachas, Melechim? It all was negative to punish Paro, and Menela, in the punishment the Jewish people would be strengthened. Those two can go together. But there was no concept over here of humbling Paro. That didn't exist. Rabbi Akiva said no. He holds like those opinions that say that Paro was given free choice by hardening his heart. So there was an idea of humbling him. In addition, there was an idea of punishing him for past things. So therefore, Charon Apo is a separate thing. That was to make an impression to humble him. And then there was also punishment through Evrazam, Tzora, and Mishlachas Malachi Roim. So Rabbi Akiva holds there were 5 aspects to the Makos, one of them being the ability, the purpose of humbling him. And Rabbi Lezer said, no, that didn't exist. There was no such thing as humbling him because he had no free choice. It was only punishment, so it was only 4 aspects. That's, I think, an interesting idea. Okay, and then the Jewish people also were given the, what's it called, a strengthening through the Eser Makos. Now, it's interesting that the Sfarim say that the Eser Makos, different Sfarim, in different places, say the Eser Makos corresponded to 3 other things. They corresponded to the Asara Mamoros Shenivra Ha'olam, the 10 utterances with which the world was created. They also correspond to the 10 commandments, the Aseres HaDibros, and they also correspond to the 10 tests that Avraham Avinu went through. One year, I had a whole grandiose thing on the Eser Makos, and each one whatever, and I showed how each Makah corresponded to the first of the Asura Mamoros, the first of the Asura Sadibros, the first of the Asura Nisyonos. I couldn't repeat it to you now, so I'm not going to, but I don't remember what I said, but I guess it was interesting. But now I'm thinking that each one of these things represents a different function of the Makos. The Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, Basora Mamoros Nivra Ha'olam, why so many? Lipara Mirishoyim Shema Abdi Mesa'olam Shenivra. Since the world was created with 10 Mamoros, a important world, it's to punish the wicked who destroy a world that created with 10 Mamoros. So the fact that the 10 plagues correspond to the 10 Mamoros is punishment. Because that was the 10 Mamoros, is punishment. The fact that it corresponds to the Aseres HaDibros, what were the Aseres HaDibros? Before the Aseres HaDibros, it says, Vayidaber Elokim Eskol Advarim Wa'ela Limor. God said, I am a judge. I am an officer, a policeman. You do these things, you get rewarded. You don't do them, you get punished. They were Azoros. They were warnings. They were edicts of the king. Those are to make you fall into place and do what's right. So that was the second function of the 10 plagues, to make Paro fall into place and do what's right. Connected the Aseres HaDibros, which is exactly that idea. And the third thing, what were the Nisyonos of Avraham Avinu, the 10 trials we mentioned many times in Nefesh HaChaim, Ruchaim, Reb Chaim Voloshiner, that Avraham Avinu created the wellspring of potential in the Jewish people. Right? If Avraham Avinu had not passed the Nisayon of Lech Lecha, no Jew in history could have left familiar surroundings and Chutzlars and come to Eretz Israel. If you do that, you draw on the power that Avraham Avinu created within the psyche of Klal Yisrael. The same thing goes with the Akedah. If Avraham Avinu hadn't been willing to go to the Akedah, no Jew in history could have ever sacrificed their life or sacrificed their family al Kiddush Hashem. So the 10 Nisyonos of Avraham correspond to the strengthening of the Jewish people. The Jewish people got strengthened, just like they got strengthening from the 10 Nisyonos of Avraham, they got strengthening from the Eser Makos. So again, we have this idea of three functions to the Eser Makos. Punishment to Paro, and there are Midrashim that say every Mako is Mida Keneged Mida. They made the Jewish people water carriers, their water turned to blood, and so on and so on and so on. So there's an aspect of punishment, which is one function of the matter, to hit. And Keneged the Asara Mamaros, the world was created in order to punish the wicked that destroy the world that was created with Asara Mamaros. So that all fits together. And then we have the second function of the Makos, to humble Paro and give him the incentive to repent and to let the Jewish people go. That's the second function of the staff, right? To be a staff of authority, right? To bring someone to humble themselves in front of that authority. And that is Keneged the Aseres HaDibros, which are warnings, Azoros. Accept my edicts, and then you'll be rewarded. If you don't accept them, you'll be punished. It's an edict, it's a warning. That was the purpose of the Eser Makos, also a warning. And the third purpose was to strengthen the Jewish people. And that's the purpose of the Mata, to give what's it called, the support. And Keneged the Asara Nisyonos of Avraham Avinu, that gave strength to the Jewish people. So all of that fits very nicely together. We explained in the past that the whole purpose of Shibud Mitzrayim was to take away any vestige of nationhood from the Jewish people so they could be recreated as God's nation. And we explained that there are three things that a nation's nationhood depends on. Identity. Every nation has its specific identity, its resources, and its goals. That's what makes each nation different than another nation. God said, this is Amzu Yatsarti Li. This is a nation that's God made. They don't make themselves. They're not evolved like other nations. I make them. And therefore, first I'm going to erase any vestige of nationhood, make them slaves, strangers in a land that's not there, take away their identity. Slaves, whatever a slave owns, belongs to his master, even his body and his time. And lastly, goal. Take away any goal, any purpose, by putting them through oppression of Avodas Perach. And we've explained in the past, Avodas Perach is work with no purpose. So we're taking away their identity, their resources, and their purpose through Gerus, Avdus, and Inui. And then God said, I'm going to return that to them, but totally for me. And that's the Arba Rishonos of Geula, which are really three, which are four. The Hoseisi Eschem, I'll take you out of Egypt and give you back your identity. I'll save you from their work and give you back your resources. And I will redeem you with an outstretched arm and a what's it called, the Bezroah and the Tui of the Shvatim Gidol, with great things, right, give you back purpose. I'll give you your purpose from within, and I'll take away the people on the outside who are preventing you from fulfilling your purpose. Two kinds of Geula. From the outside, from the inside. Before God redeemed us and gave us back those three aspects, our identity, our resources, and our goals, He first wanted to show us what the opposite of us is. We're a God-made nation. What is the example of a man-made nation, and how corrupt is that? That's Egypt. So God brought the Eser Makos, and in those Eser Makos, He punished the Egyptians, and He humbled them, and He also taught us a lesson. This is what a culture looks like when they think they're man-made, self-made. And this is the opposite of what you're supposed to be. You're supposed to be a God-made people. The first three plagues, Tzitzach, Dam, Tzvardeh, Kinim, affected the identity of the Egyptians. How? Because they identified with the Nile and with the land. So the land turned into lice, and the Nile turned into blood and produced frogs. And the deeper meaning is the following. When a person thinks that they're a self-made people, so this is the thing. God made us, and He is the foundation of our life. What is the life force of a human being? Blood. That's God's contribution to my life. Basically, I don't have to add anything to that blood. Right? It's a life supply of blood. If everything goes well, you don't have to do anything. You don't have to have transfusions or whatever. The blood is a contained system. It grows with you. It renews itself or whatever. So God said the following. If you accept the fact that I'm the source of your life, that's blood. But I don't want you to be a robot. I want you to enhance that. So I want you to enhance your life. That's another liquid. That's called water. That's what you introduce. Water. Water is man's contribution to his life. Water is blood is God's contribution. If you think that you're a self-made man and you are the source of your life force, then you are basically conceptually changing God's blood into your water. So God said, fine, you want to change my blood into your water? I'll show you what happens when I change your water into my blood. You can't live with that. You can't live the other ways. So the first thing hit their identity. You think you're self-made people? You want to change blood into water? I'll change water into blood. And if you're that self-identity that you create, and it has nothing to do with God, right, is very harmful. It will produce noisy frogs that eventually will end up killing you. It'll be everywhere. It's a negative thing. And not only that, but if you have an identity of being a self-made person, I created the world for the sake of man. The whole world is a basis for man. But if you think that you're a self-made person, then not only isn't the world a basis for you, I'm going to make you the basis for even the smallest little louse. You're going to be the lice live on people, and the opposite of people living on the earth. Instead of the earth being a base for you, the earth is going to turn into lice, and you're going to be a base for the earth. You're going to be a base for the lice. That takes away their identity. The next three things Arov, Dever, Shchin took away their resources. Arov took away their homes. The wild animals came, they had no home, no privacy in their home. That's a person's, one of his major resources is home. The wild animals took away the homes. The privacy of a home. Dever took away their animals, which were their sacred property. And Shchin took away their bodies, which is the greatest property a person has, his body, his physical body. So those three took away their resources. And the last four took away their purpose. Why? Because Bara took away their immediate food supply. Arba took away their longer food supply. If you don't have a food supply, you have no purpose. You can't achieve anything because you don't have any life. And Choshech took away their ability to function, also took away their purpose. And Makis Becharis took away their future. Note, the children, the firstborn, were taken away from them. So purpose was taken away, but the last four Makis, resources, the middle three, and identity, the first three, and the Jewish people, it all served as a punishment to Egypt. According to some, it served as a warning to them, and at the same time, it served as a tremendous lesson and strengthening to the Jewish people that we should learn what we're supposed to be by learning what the opposite, right? Sometimes in order to really appreciate the light, you first have to understand the darkness. First you have to be a sur meira, go away from the evil before you can really appreciate the... You want to understand what it is, a nation that's built by God, identity, resources, and purpose, first see the corruption and the what's it called, bankruptcy of a society that's built on being self-made people. That, in a nutshell, I think is a little bit about the Esor Makos. If we... think about it, right? Every year we learn this. Every time you learn Torah, it's like you're supposed to live it again. You're living it again. Every Pesach, we relive it through the time of year. So if we relive these Esor Makos and understand the punishment and the humbling of the Egyptians, and we have the Yetzer Hara too, we take that part, and we take the strengthening from it, then, like it says, what's it called? The Rav Amram is going to show us those same kinds of miracles in the future, hopefully in the very near future, that the Bias Goel Tzedek Meherav Yamein.